Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
Welcome, team, to Extra Hello. Beans.
Yeah.
Welcome to Extra Beans. Welcome to House Atreides, isn't it? An elite squad of...
Doomed?
A doomed family.
Can I just say, I think you're obsessed with Dune 2. The number of times you've compared things to Dune 2.
It has been quite a big impact on me, Dune 2.
Yeah.
It's a great metaphor for everything, isn't it? Think about it. We've all got a giant worm in our lives somewhere that we'd like to ride around on.
You're going to be quite hard to follow for anyone who hasn't seen the films or read the book.
That's true, actually. Yeah, apologies. Get yourselves down to a cinema and watch Dune 2 while you still can.
Mm.
And listen to us talking about it eventually. At some point, we're going to put out a thing.
Yeah, we're going to put out an episode of Film Corner about Dune 2. It'll be out soon. I just need to listen to it again to make sure we didn't libel anyone.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't libel anyone in our first episode of this season, did we? No one who's able to come after us, legally speaking, because we hit the druids and hit them hard, didn't we?
We did.
The ancient druids, that is. Not your modern days.
No.
Episode one being Stonehenge.
In which, I think, in general, we sort of slagged off Stonehenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Though I'm quite fond of the old gaff.
You are?
Yeah. Yeah, I see it a lot, really. But I haven't been fond enough of it to actually physically stop and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you've had an ample chance.
Take it in, get my watercolours out, anything like that. One of these days.
Yeah, but apologies if we were a bit harsh on the grand old dame that she is.
Is the reason you're saying that because colleague of ours, Ellis James, let it be known on one of his many podcasts that he felt that you had slandered Stonehenge?
Yeah, that has happened. So Ellis James was not happy about the way we treated it. I think possibly me specifically. But, you know.
But get over it, it's just some old rocks.
Exactly. It's just some quite poorly arranged bad rocks. Yeah, let's do this.
Shall I tell you what knocks it into a cocked hat?
Go on,
Sutton Hoo. That's Ooh. Right.
Sutton Hoo?
It's a bit smoother, isn't it, Sutton Hoo?
Yeah.
What is Sutton Hoo
smoother
again?
Smoother effect.
Sutton Hoo is, I've never been there actually, isn't it where there's a Viking longboat was found?
I thought there was a big sort of circular structure and...
That's the toilet block.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, the toilet block at Sutton Hoo is worth a visit. That's what
basically, in the UK, you can basically stick a visitor centre in a car park next to basically anything. And it becomes one of our top 10 attractions.
You just assume that somewhere there's a Saxon mound.
Yeah. Or a scooped out bit. Or a flat area which may well have held a mound previously. Or a scooped area.
Or the mound might still be there. It's just been covered over.
That's right. Because if you take a mound, then two mounds of roughly equal shape and size and put them just to the left and right of it, you actually create a higher flat area. But look deeper and it's actually three mounds. Potentially.
These could have been Anglo-Saxon land boobs. I've just looked it up. Yes, Sutton Hoo is an awe-inspiring, this is according to the National Trust, an awe-inspiring Anglo-Saxon royal burial site.
Okay.
Bloody hell.
Great. I would like to go. There's that decent helmet, isn't there?
Okay. There's a decent helmet. And there's quite a lot of small print about
pottery shards.
This site may not, in fact, create ore, or if it does create ore, it might not be very good ore, it might be quite bad ore. Also, what is ore, really, at the end of the day? It's pretty hard to define, isn't it? Do you know?
Awesome toilets, though.
Great toilets. Genuinely awesome.
Yes, so we talked about Stonehenge.
We did.
And here's some ore.
How are we all today?
Pretty good, Tom.
Yep.
What's happening on your end?
Not a huge amount, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
In a way.
Well, it depends, doesn't it? I mean, I find beauty in the small things as well as the big things. So for me, life is constantly...
So in terms of... You mean in terms of sort of provable, documentable achievements?
Documentable achievements-wise, a lot of it will have fallen through the cracks. I've washed the five-a-side kits.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
For your imaginary kids.
For imaginary kids, yeah. And they really, really stunk this week. Because they, yet again.
Well, those baby mannequins are starting to fall to bits, aren't they?
They are. They are. They're getting musty.
It's because you made them out of the wrong materials, I think.
I did.
That's the trouble.
I've made them out of chives. I shouldn't have made them out of chives. I thought, I've got loads and loads of chives. I can have...
Or what I don't have is loads of chive children.
Well, I don't know. So, but it turns out you can't have loads of chives and loads of chives children. You've got to make a choice. I went for chives children, and they've gone off.
It's chives choice, isn't it?
It's chives choice. But I've worked it into the mythology, the mythos I have around the imaginary children, which is that they're all slowly decomposing. So I've worked it into the story in a way.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what you tell strangers who see you wheeling the children around in the pram and yeah.
When you go to the Natural History Museum.
That's right. Well, they've both shat themselves again, isn't it? It's part of the story.
And what's that covering up?
The fact that I've shat myself. Yeah. Every time I see that massive dinosaur. Is it still there? I don't think it is, actually.
The Diplodocus. I think it's not, though, is it? It's gone on tour.
It's on tour. It's on bloody tour.
Is it?
Yeah.
Everyone's on tour these days, aren't they?
It's me, Taylor, and a Diplodocus.
Well, I tell you what, if I had to see a crusty old dinosaur...
Here we go.
with an impressive...
long sloping neck?
With a long sloping net, and with a sense that a lot of it is actually just held together with a metal, it's a sort of titanium skeleton that's...
looks like it was dug up by Victorians.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you need a bit of help? Frightens children from across the...
Frightens children from across the... Yeah. And with surprisingly tiny little arms...
There we go. Back on track.
Then I'd probably make sure to go and check out. And I've forgotten which way around.
Just plug for Taylor Swift in the third
way. I'd go for Taylor Swift.
Emergency backup option. There's always got to be an emergency ripcord on a switcheroo.
Yeah.
Oh, it's horrible watching a stalled switcheroo happen in front of you, isn't it?
I know. It's as embarrassing as when your car literally stalls in the middle of a junction.
Yeah.
And you forget how to... You forget which is the piston, which is the crank,
The number of the number of Hyundai I10s you've abandoned at T-junctions, Henry, is quite strong, isn't it?
Yeah. I just go.
But it sounds like you're stalling a steam train, so...
I often... well, tell you what, if I wanted to get into an old form of transport that has powered by coal.
Yeah. Come on.
And
you can pull it back.
Probably has courses around the chill turns in the old days with a rattling buffet car. I've stalled another. Often that'll happen. I'll get straight from one Hyundai into another, stall that one, and literally be onto my third Hyundai within 5 minutes.
I can't have two failed switcheroos in the opening section.
The second one, I didn't even know what the premise was of the second one. But if I start it, I'll find the switch. But I didn't even have the thing to switch. I didn't know what I was switching. I didn't have the, you know what I mean?
Wow. That's very bold, isn't
this
it?
This is cavalier.
The switcheroo premise presents itself on a platter. So to go in without, I mean, that's bold as brass, isn't it?
Yeah, arrogant. I paid for it. I will sometimes become very self-conscious in a car, especially on hill starts. I've wrecked a lot of cars on hill starts. The things I do to clutches. Because I just get self-conscious that, like I did with the switcheroo just then, I become ultra self-conscious about the mechanism of the car and the clutch and the... And I feel that judgmental voice.
Do you know what? I quite like getting opprobrium from other road users in that situation.
What? Do you?
Like, I just sit there, take my time, people start beeping and being annoyed, and I just think, come on, guys, why have you got to be?
Yeah.
Just chill out.
And also, the fact is...
Turn off your blue lights and chill out.
And also, the fact is, I'm in an open-top Saab, I'm looking absolutely fantastic right now, And then what happens is they start getting out and offering to help, don't they? And patron and sort of mansplaining stuff to you, don't they?
And they, yeah, they assume I'm a beautiful woman, and then
they just assume you're a beautiful Scandinavian woman, don't they?
Yeah, who needs help? Yeah,
yeah.
I think they're going to be is their knight in shining armor moment, and then I turn around, give them a wink.
Yeah. Well, they scatter, don't they?
They scatter back into their Ford Mondeos, and they just start ramming me. Ram, 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 ram. I did actually stall yesterday with the top off on the Saab.
Really?
And I did feel like, you know, that's like extra twat multiplier, isn't it? Like people just really must have thought I was an absolute knob.
I think it's one of the worst moments in life is when you've just stalled. I just get instant sweat, instant face sweat in terms of like, I've got one chance to start this up again. I'm having flashbacks to a particular holiday I had in Portugal, in Madeira, where I absolutely, what I did to the clutch on this hire car was, I could describe it to you, but we'd have to cut it out. It's so obscene. It smelt like a hog roast gone badly wrong. It was like, it smelt like it's a hog roast where the sprinklers have had to go off. Do you know what I mean? We're cancelling the roast.
We're cancelling the wedding.
You can still see it, can't you? There's still a sort of smouldering patch just outside Porto that you can see.
It's still there. It's visible from space.
It's so hot.
It's the only smouldering, human-made smouldering patch visible from space. Yeah. That's his claim to fame. I once hired a car. So the island of Madeira is almost entirely on a slope. It's one of the only... It's basically a dunce's hat in the form of an island. Which is actually how you feel when you get there, because it's quite a weird.
With a revolving restaurant at the top.
With the tiny revolving restaurant, they can only take one person. Right at the very, very peak of the top.
I think I'm right in saying, is Madeira the island where it's really hard to land a plane and it's a bit hairy when you arrive?
I think it probably is. It might well, because it's such a weird conical island. And you do feel like a dunce when you get there, because it's really conical. So driving's almost impossible. It's in the middle of the beautiful sea, but it doesn't have a beach anywhere around the rim of the cone. There's no beach. Mm. So you can't actually get in the sea. You can see the sea, but the sea is surrounded by rocky...
It's just the roaring Atlantic.
It's the roaring, roaring Atlantic pounding away at sharp, jagged rocks.
Yeah. Just hurling orcas against holiday bungalows every 5 minutes.
Yeah, which is why all the bungalows have to be orca-proof. They have to have orca-proof windows. Which are so thick, like seagulls look absolutely massive. It's terrifying. a lot of the old people will cower in the bathrooms because everything outside looks so massive. That a lot of the time the bathrooms will have cower spaces, cower shelves, cower cupboards, because they'll just be old people cowering. It attracts an older, more dignified silver-haired tourist because it's a stop on...
The way to Dignitas?
Yeah. And actually, you can
just push your spouse into the outgoing tide if you fancy.
You've got different options. You don't, it's not as slow and as dignified as Dignitas. The other option is you just open up the orca-proof windows, stand in your front room, and you'll be absolutely toast within about 45 seconds.
Buffeted by porpoises, orcas, seals.
Smashed to smithereens by porpoises, seals, walrus. I mean, you might get 6-7 head of narwhal.
Oh, the best you can get through is you get run through by a marlin, isn't it? That's what you're hoping for.
Yeah, but what if the marlin's facing the other way?
Oh, you're in big trouble. you're hoping for the wild rye pasting and then getting pebble dashed by some halibuts.
And of course, at the end of every day, they come through with the mega colanders, don't they? So a lot of the locals work with mega colanders. And they'll go through the room and they'll colander out any of the tourists. And the rest of it will form one of the most...
The island, the communal paella.
The communal, it's one of the chunkiest paellas you're getting.
One of the most mammal-filled paellas that you've ever had.
It's such a mammal. You can have an entire mouthful and not have any fish in it. But it is seafood. But it's just, it's sea mammals. Well, with porpoise, dolphin.
Mm-hmm. Manatee.
Manatee. Cabin boys. Cabin girls, the old scuba instructor, will make their way in, won't they? Yeah, no, it's a weird place to go on holiday. It's entirely comical. You know, a lot of places have this when you go on holiday, which is this one local dish. And there it's called scabbard fish. So everyone tries scabbard fish.
In order to eat the scabbard fish, you have to pull out a swordfish.
And you can't put it back until it's coated in blood.
In the blood of a rival. Yeah, so scabbard fish is one of nature's most amazing symbiotic relationships. Well, all I remember is scabbard fish is a local fish. They serve it in a special way. Maybe they do pull a swordfish out. I don't know what happens. But it's one of the things where you have it the first time. Brilliant. And then it's like day three. Yes, give me the... scabbard me up, yes. Scabbard it, yeah. Just put the scabbard on the plate, mate. Jesus Christ.
I've looked up the scabbard fish, and it's one of the least appetizing things I think I've ever seen in my life. That is horrific.
Well, that's right. It's absolutely horrendous. Yeah, I mean,
this as well.
It's an insult to scabbards, isn't it?
Oh, my God. Oh, right, yeah. I mean, that's primordial, isn't
it? It's absolutely primordial. Yeah, yeah. Although the only thing it does have in common with a scabbard is when you see it, you do want to put a sword in its mouth.
I mean, it's just, yeah, fine. I mean, I understand how that's able to survive in the freezing waters of the North Atlantic. But why you think, oh, I might pop that in a pie later.
Yeah. It's absolutely horrific looking, isn't it? It genuinely looks evil.
Evil looking bastard. Yeah.
So I guess the only way to get people to eat it is if you are trapped on a conical island surrounded by sharp rocks, orca ordnance being like peppering your hotel room.
You know, on Facebook and Instagram and stuff, sometimes the algorithm will decide you into something and start sending you loads of videos of a certain thing.
Yeah, fat dancing babies for me. And I'm not going to lie, keep them coming. I'm fine. They're a lot of fun.
People who make sculptures of small boats out of chewing gum. Yeah.
Yeah.
So for me, it's this American guy who shows you how to fillet different kinds of fish.
Oh, okay.
And then eats it. And it's not that entertaining, but because it's just being put in front of me, I'll watch a few of them. The most recent one, the guy's really excited because he's got a fish that's illegal to eat in Japan.
Hmm.
Because if you eat more than like 200 grams of it, it makes you shit yourself in like an insane way.
Rather than in a measured and calm way.
Yeah.
In a dignified way.
It's one of nature's most delayed defense mechanisms that isn't on behalf of that fish. It's a regret system whereby you regret killing it and eating it. Which it's too late for the fish itself.
You regret not being sick.
Yeah. I will have the last laugh.
It's the last laugh.
Yeah.
Be quiet while I fillet you. His whole thing was like, and I'm going to eat 600 grams of it.
That is good entertainment. That is good content. Come on. I would watch that.
You can switch to Ask Cam at any point from then on. We'll have Face Cam, we'll have Ask Cam, we'll have three different Ask Cams.
Hit the brown button.
Yeah, just hit the brown button. And for those of you on Meta with the full...
Well, in the Metaverse.
In the Metaverse, you can put on the headset.
Or the R set.
If you can afford the R set as well. And should be quite the ride.
Grim. Well, basically it was that. I mean, he ate it. He went, oh, I wonder what's going to happen. And I thought, I think I know what's going to happen. And then the next bit of the video is him filming on his phone on a toilet going, oh, I shouldn't have done this. Oh no.
But at the same time, he knows he's racking up the hits.
I think because I watched the end of that video, like Facebook now have just gone, this is what this guy wants. So it's just all fish-related stuff.
What is your standard filleting? Talk us through one. Have you learned how to fillet a fish now? If I gave you a salmon or something, what would you do?
Head off first seems to be the way.
What? Why are you filleting
it? Well, what do you mean?
Are you interested in the fish offal, Henry?
What about non-filleted? You didn't hear a lot about fish offal. Okay, so what is filleting? It's making the fish prepared for cooking, is that right?
Yeah, it's just chop it into bits that you can cook rather than, as Mike says, there's normally a long black kind of tendrily... full of like black poison bit in the middle of a fish.
But with most foods, there's the option which is you tempura it, which is so you put it in the tempura sort of batter mix, then you put it in the deep fryer by the tail, pull it out, and then just dip it in your mouth and eat the whole lot.
Yeah, that's always an option, I'd like to see you do that with a fresh Atlantic salmon, Henry. That would be
for the full top cat technique.
That could go big. Yeah, how do you fillet a fish?
Mm-hmm. Chop head off, descale it with a little machine.
A descaling machine.
Chop its fins off.
Oh.
Yeah. Why was that a bridge too far, Henry? Head was step one.
Give it its fins.
Give it its little fins.
Oh, this just seems so harmless, the fins. All right, yeah, then.
Tail off, chop it down the middle. Take out the evil black shit in the middle.
Yeah.
And you're kind of there, then.
Well, what about the bones? Do you lift those off in one...
Oh, there's a spine. Yeah, they kind of pull that off.
Okay. Oh. God, it really makes my dancing baby seem incredibly wholesome. I need to see a nice dancing baby to sort of detox after this conversation.
I didn't ask for these videos. It's just what I get served. Have you seen that we talked about the idea of a movie, The Maitlist Chronicles, starring Henry Maitlist? And they're making it.
Yeah, of course. What,
starring Zendaya?
Netflix are making a series about Emily Maitlist's interview with Prince Andrew.
Oh, that's good.
Judy Anderson plays Maitlist, I think. I think Prince Andrew is played by...
I think it's Rufus Sewell.
Oh, it's a bit of a poison chalice, isn't it?
Rufus Sewell, that's right.
Because he plays sort of posh bastard, doesn't he?
I think Billy Piper's in the mix as well, but I don't know if she's... It's a cameo as Billy Piper of... I don't know what Billy Piper's doing, but I think she's in the mix.
The manageress of a Pizza Express in where is it? Warwick.
Woking.
Of course I'll have the Romana bass, you fucking bitch. I bet he'll be portrayed awfully, won't he, in that scene? More dough balls! These dough balls aren't perfectly spherical.
I want dough balls with tiny crowns on them. I've told you before, tiny crowns of butter. What's wrong with you? I'm a prince.
It's weird, that thing, isn't it? Playing real people really soon after things have happened, which seems to be a new thing now. There isn't the thing of letting time... You know, normally you wait till everyone's dead.
Yeah.
Right.
So normally there isn't the issue of like, well, should we get Gillian Anderson to play Maitlist, or should we get Maitlist to play Maitlist? Because Maitlist is Maitlist. You know what I mean?
And might be up for it.
And I think she gives a terrific Maitlist, I think. it's uncanny. Yeah, although, of course, the truth of acting... isn't it, Mike?
Go on.
That Maitlist probably can't. The irony is, Maitlist probably can't play herself, because acting yourself isn't the same as being yourself. So as soon as she started, it would be like, and action. And she'd be like, hello. Hello, Mr. Prince Andrew. I don't know, she'd do something really... It'd be like, Maitlist, you're doing something really weird with...
She decided that she had to make a choice.
Yeah, exactly.
A strong choice.
A strong choice, and it would be the wrong one. Maitlist, it's quite hurdy-gurdy. Can you just be more like Maitlist? Just literally just be Maitlist. And then, hello!
It's possible.
Why are you Prince Andrew? We've really fucked up here.
Have we stood down Gillian Anderson? Is she still available? She's gone to Centre Parks. Fuck!
There was a Boris Johnson one recently, wasn't there?
Yes, Kenneth Branagh played...
Kenneth Branagh,
yes. Boris Johnson.
I think dramas are trying to catch up with themselves. Possibly, is what's happening. It's getting closer and closer.
It's getting closer and closer to being almost real time, isn't
it? Yeah. That's the aim.
Is to get the actual real time drama.
Yeah. You might be involved in the scandal as it's happening.
As it's happening live. In the same way that theatre, you can now watch a theatre show in the cinema, you could probably now watch real life in the cinema.
But portrayed by Jimmy Nesbitt.
But portrayed by...
Being portrayed in the theatre simultaneously by... A very hot young devising theatre troupe. It's getting just piped into earpieces.
Or the original cast of Alfida St. Pet. You can choose according to what has more resonance with your own life.
Yeah. Jimmy Nail turn into a radio play at the drop of a hat if it needs to
be. Like that.
Yeah.
If he has to. I'm up for that. Live dramatisation streaming of true politics.
How much of a buffer will you allow between it actually happening and the drama taking place? 10 seconds?
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe like a 1 second buffer. I think there has to be a buffer.
It's got to be. But yeah, it's just, I think, long enough that you can beep out the C word, basically. That's all you need.
Yeah, that's all you need.
Yeah, you need probably a high-ranking civil servant or military officer somewhere keeping an eye on that who can just beep it out as it comes.
And you'll need some very quick pixelators for the urinal scenes.
Yeah, that's going to be quite a lot of... That's quite a big team. Underused, lower-ranking clergy, I'd have thought, would be quite good for that.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. You've got a lot of time in the hands. Mm-hmm.
Don't worry, the deacon's on it.
Exactly. Now, I think it's going to have to be written into the Constitution that there is a 1 second buffer minimum, because
which will mean that we will need to write a constitution, of course.
Well, we're going to have to write one and then add this on.
Yeah.
So, because it will need to be an add-on.
Yeah.
So we'll have to write the main. Five
I think
points.
I would start. Our starting point should be the Pizza Express menu, because you need to start somewhere.
You need to start somewhere,
and then just evolve from that towards.
And it's also probably the one document that has changed the least since I've been alive.
Yes,
I mean, all they've done is add the Romana base in the early noughties.
Okay, so we can agree that the constitution is going to be the first ever Romana based constitution.
So that's a thinner, crispier base than your American constitutions,
which is thick and doughy, and has caused no end of problems.
Controversial question: dips. I personally don't like dips with the Constitution. I don't know how you are about it.
I think you would probably need to bring the garlic lobby on side. So I would have a garlic butter involved as a dip. But okay, I think we'll have a garlic butter
lobby. What? How do you feel about small inverted plastic tripods?
Sorry, I don't think they should have any place. I think that's very much a Domino's takeaway vibe, is what you're conjuring there.
Oh, that's what you're. I see. That's what you're talking about.
I'm talking about if you're going to deliver this constitution, do you want it to arrive in its actual state it was intended to be, or are you fine for bits of it to have fallen off and moved down to one end of the box, e.g., pepperoni clauses, that sort of thing.
The pineapple amendment.
I think we want a gyroscopic thermo bag on the back of the delivery scooter.
I like that.
Mm. Well, it's a start, isn't it?
So what I'm saying is that Stonehenge, in that respect, is a bit like, in the sense that it's impressive once you bear in mind the technical limitations of the day. Mm-hmm. It's a bit like certain films where, have you ever had that, where you've got a film that you think is brilliant or that's famously brilliant, and you show it to someone, and then actually it's a bit crap. And you have to keep saying, yeah, but bear in mind, at the time, this was the first. Yeah,
I do know.
Yeah, but they hadn't, this, no one had actually, at the time, there'd never been a film about a megalodon. So at the time, this was actually really quite,
you get a bit with music, don't you? Like, if you listen to, like, I don't know, Jean-Michel Jarre or something.
Yes, exactly.
And it sounds a bit lame now, but you go, but at the time.
You'd been a bit at the time. So you have to have a bit of a healthy dose of that. But at the time, don't you, going around Stonehenge? Because basically, any small sports centre in the country is more impressive.
Well, just anything with central heating, basically.
It's miles more impressive. So a lot of sheds. Well, a lot of, like, people that have a shed office, for example, that will be more impressive. It's got to have, might have Wi-Fi.
Any garden centre.
Any garden centre.
Hinges.
Anything with
any hinge. Anything with just a hinge by itself. So you could just drive past it, go to a DIY centre in Swindon, look at some hinges. That's another option you've got.
I am now looking at photographs of Stonehenge, and it is amazing.
Bearing in mind the technical limitations of the time. Isn't it a bit rude to them at the time as well to go, this is amazing, because you were all fucking useless, and you managed to do that? Because you were fucking all shit. So this is amazing. That's like coming up to us and going, look at that sports centre. It's amazing. You managed to make a sports centre. Wow. It's a bit patronising. Like, steady on, mate.
Is it the equivalent of like a four-year-old handing you like a quite crap drawing of a horse? And you have to go, wow, look at that. Look at that horse.
Wow,
amazing.
That's amazing. And you've given it, you've got the wheels and everything just right. Yeah. And you've given it its backhand. A lot of people don't draw the hand coming out of horses.
With this Stonehenge naysaying, you're storing up an absolutely massive mystical hoodoo
vengeance.
Yeah. There's every chance that you'll be struck by lightning in the next 24 hours.
It's true, actually. I'm asking for it, Ben. I'm looking at the photos of Stonehenge. Right, it is impressive, but I will say, if you photograph something with the sun sort of setting on it in that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could make a sports centre look pretty good with that. I would say it is impressive. I mean, it's pretty cool. It's very cool. It's very cool. When was it built?
5,000 years ago or so, they say.
Right, yeah.
And we're still waiting for the builders to send the bloody invoice.
Whee! Hey? Lovely.
So what roads are on the A what? The A
303.
The A303.
Artery to the southwest.
Artery to the southwest. So it's a bit like travelling 5,000 years back in time, isn't it, when you go and visit Stonehenge? Or you could always turn left and drive up to Derby, and that's like going back in 6,000 years in time because of Derby. Yeah?
Jokes.
Very neatly done.
Yeah. Now, by the way, I don't want to offend Henge people. Like, it's beautiful. It was 5,000 years ago. I mean, bearing that in mind, that is amazing. I mean, it is, isn't it? I mean, I don't know what was going on 5,000 years ago, so I'll take it as read. I mean, but yeah.
Well, in Britain, yeah, not a lot.
Presumably, that was very hard to do. Yeah, in Britain, not a lot.
I think on the Nile, there was quite a lot going on. Mesopotamia, but yeah, Britain.
Yeah.
Henry?
Hmm. Yeah?
Are you okay? You've gone all pale. You look like you've seen a podcast?
About ghosts.
About ghosts. Lovely, yes, we did a podcast about ghosts.
We did a podcast about ghosts. Very, very nice. Good.
Very nice. Treated the subject with a degree of detached rigour, I would say.
Didn't we all say that we thought ghosts were bollocks and didn't exist?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
So we slammed Henge and ghosts.
Yeah. And you'd think that if ghosts were real, they would have heard us saying that and would have played merry hell with our lives for the past few weeks.
Would have been impact by now, wouldn't there?
Yeah.
But they haven't.
They haven't.
And you'd think if Stonehenge was real, the fact that we'd slagged it off would have meant that we'd have experienced some sort of pagan curse. And the fact that I have large plate mushrooms growing out of my right leg is almost certainly...
just the damp in your new flat, isn't it?
It's probably just the damp in my new flat.
Which definitely wasn't caused by a ghost.
Definitely wasn't caused by a ghost.
The ghost of an ancient pagan.
Listen, if you dare... I tell you what the scariest ghost is as a kid is that ghost in the library in Ghostbusters. Do you remember? At the beginning.
Oh, the librarian, the who looks all sort of smart and sensible.
Yeah, and then turns around and goes, wah!
I had a similar experience with the sort of angels or the spirits, whatever they are, in the Ark of the Covenant in Indiana Jones, when they go all
there. Oh, yes.
Similar kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Scared the willies out of me.
You can't look at them, they're so scary looking.
Yeah.
But there's a weird thing in the logic of ghosts, which is that, on the one hand, they're really terrifying, and they make you want to scream and run away. But if you were to just go, okay, hang on, breathe. Okay, the ghost is in my face. Screaming. It's got horrible, like, skeletal face. It's got, like, big glowy eyes. It's screaming. It's got, like, wavy, really, like, rags, horrible, raggy, wavy clothes. And it's off the floor. It's maybe got some, like, lightning coming off it and stuff. Yeah. But if you just hold your nerve, breathe. Breathe, Henry, breathe. Hold your nerve, breathe. Wait. It can't actually do anything. It's a ghost. It goes through stuff. It can't. Yeah, what's it going to do? Go through me. It can't. You know what I mean? It exists in a different realm. It can't sort of touch things and pick things up. So what can it actually do to you?
But Henry, let's replay that scenario.
Yeah.
Replace that ghost.
Yeah.
With a child with the face of a goat.
Run away. Oh, God. Let's go to a carvery and just order goats. Just go to the guy and say, go to the meat market and say, just the goat, please. All the goat. We've got to eat all the goat. Then the curse will be lifted. What's good about the film Hereditary, though? Again, it's on the creepy side. So it veers away from axe-wielding psycho towards tiny little doll's houses with little doll people in it. Isn't it? There's a dollhouse theme. Remember? The woman... in it, her job or hobby is a perfectly creepy sort of horror film thing to do, which is she makes little replicas of little things in rooms and people and things.
I see. Does she buy a haunted doll or something like that? Is it from an old, ye olde bric-a-brac store that I'd never noticed before and I can't find again?
Seems fine. It says, cursed toys.
Seems fine. So absolute bargains.
And these yellow sticker ones are reduced because they're really badly cursed, but they can't be too bad. Yes, I picked up this lovely severed cursed hand. It'll probably be fine, darling. It's just a severed cursed hand. We can put it on the mantelpiece.
It's just a severed cursed Sumerian hand. with a ring that glows in the moonlight.
Three of the heads of the person that sold it to me said they thought it would be fine. The other two disagreed, but they were mainly lizard. I mean, you can't trust a lizard.
And one of them always lies. They told me so.
Yes. And two of them always tell the truth. Three of them can't remember.
They're creepy.
But for example, in Hereditary, which is one of the, as I say, I've only probably seen 20 horror films in my life, the ghost or the kind of spirit who's in that, who's like a kind of demon type.
Demon.
Yeah.
Demon.
Yeah. Compels people to do things, doesn't it? So it like...
Oh, really?
It's able to force people to like set fire to their husband or, I think at one point, chop their own head off.
Oh, wow.
It sort of compels them to do things.
Cook the pizza at 250 degrees. Completely ruin it.
What will Dr. Oetker have to say about that? But yeah, they can do mischief, can't they? Or if they're a poltergeist, they can move stuff around in a
that's
way
that's... true.
Walk into the bathroom with your socks on. It'll be fine. No, your socks are now wet. Ha ha ha, you've ruined those socks for the day. Those socks are a write-off for today. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
Mischief.
Mischief. David Lynch films are really good for the creepy horror.
Yeah, he's...
It'll just be like you'll just see someone's face shot in a weird way and I won't be able to sleep for a year. That's what happens with David. Even though sometimes overall, like have you seen Lost... Have you seen Mulholland Drive?
No, yes. It's recorded on my TV box thing, and I never have the... There's never a time to watch Mulholland Drive, I find.
So I find David Lynch films so frightening. There's just a character in that film who's this creepy guy who lives in a car park. Yeah. And it's just... There's a scene with him which is just... And basically nothing happens, but it's the most terrifying thing I've ever seen. It completely creeped me out. There's this guy just talking about how he met a weird guy in a car park and then he gets shot at the car park and this weird bloke comes out and that's it.
Have you seen his sitcom?
What?
Or what he called a sitcom?
No.
I might have got this completely wrong.
Oh, is it what people... No, is it people dressed up as rabbits coming in and out of the room?
Yeah, yeah,
and there's canned laughter?
Yeah.
That's freaky as hell.
It's really, really, really sinister.
I once had... He had a new film coming out, which I think had that in it, Mike. That the film was called Inland Empire. It's one of the most unwatchable films of all time. It's completely unwatchable. It's so bizarre. But and the build-up to it coming out, I had nightmares about watching it because it was so terrifying to me that his films are so terrifying to me. I had a nightmare where I was watching Inland Empire and it was absolutely scaring the shit out of me. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
I think I've only really ever seen... I've seen Twin Peaks.
That's terrifying. Bob,
I didn't find it scary, really.
I found it really unsettling. Yeah. I loved it so much. I still haven't watched the last series, though. I'm just not ready for it somehow. But the ones from, 25 years
ago. But you see, the thing is, Ben, it's partly because I've got such a sensitive sort of... I'm not saying... Because to me... Because, you see, if you've got a sensitive soul, you'll find the child with a goat face frightening. Or a man with sort of just weird teeth, no like blood on his lips, just little things like that, frightening.
Wasabi on the side of his face.
Yeah, exactly. Man. A man with a little bit of wasabi on his chin. Yeah?
Yeah.
That, for me, that's because I've got a very, very sensitive and delicate mind, brain, soul, if you want. Whereas for you, Ben, I imagine for you, what you find terrifying is a man with a ginormous like electric pizza cutter, pizza wheel, just slicing his way through a sort of family. Bring out the pizza cutter. You know those pizza wheels, but a huge, the mega pizza cutter. And arms and legs flying everywhere, yeah? That's what frightens you.
And basically, that still doesn't faze me. And then he walks up to me and he whispers in my ear, Toby Garvey's out of gravy.
No! You are the man who was angry in the Toby Carvery.
You were so angry you blanked it out.
Yeah.
Bought another token, went back in.
So, Ben, I could see you becoming a horror character, which is the man with the meat face. And your face is just a piece of meat, right?
Thank you.
No other features.
And the origin story is, which is discovered by the cop shortly before you...
Who no one believes.
The origin story is that you once went to he was once a relatively normal person. You went to a Toby Carvery, it was out of gravy. And that pushed you over the edge.
Well, I sawed my own face off and replaced it with gammon pieces.
Yep. And you became Meat Vengeance. Yeah. I can see that happening. But basically, if you want to design a horror character, so the main...
Start with Ben.
Start with Ben. And basically, that's 90% of the job's done.
I'm essentially like a really good pizza base for a good horror pizza.
You're a great pizza base for a horror pizza. So what you do is you take Ben's face, and like you would with a pizza base, initially just put some tomato paste on it. Just smear it with tomato paste.
Fork it first. Little divots.
Yeah, you want to get a bit of purchase.
Give it a bit of forking for some purchase, then smear on the tomato paste. Shove on a couple of olives. Really push them in.
And then it's really adjust to taste after
it's
that.
Just adjust to taste.
Jerusalem artichoke with the face of a goat.
It's time for you to high and die.
I like it.
That'd be another good character you could do.
Yeah, quite good.
So another David Lynch horror film, which I think it's basically a sophisticated horror choice, isn't it, Lynch?
It's the wanker's choice.
It's the wanker. Not to put too fine a put on it. It's the absolute. Died in the wool. Arsehole's choice. is Lynch. So the other one he did called Lost Highway. Again, basically unwatchably, just an unwatchable film. It's such a weird film. But it's got this opening sequence for about 20 minutes, which is one of the most terrifying things I've ever seen. It's basically Bill Pullman plays a kind of a down on his luck saxophonist.
Okay, keep talking. I'm interested.
He's living with his wife, who's one of the Arquette actresses.
Okay.
Yep. I can't remember which Arquette it is.
Patricia?
Patricia Arquette, perhaps, I reckon. Yeah. So this is what happens. They're living at home. Yeah, God almighty, it's so frightening. They're living in a sort of LA apartment flat house. A sort of modernist kind of cool LA kind of place. They're at home together. They have a kind of awkward, cold relationship. And occasionally he plays sax in a really, really angry and emotionally intense way by himself. He'll be sweating there. It's going... They receive in the post an envelope, which has a VHS in it, which they put in, they load in the VHS player. And it's footage of the outside of their house. In grainy footage. Cut to them living the life together, a bit more awkward. He's playing sax even more intensely now. There's sweat flying off him, flying out of the end of the sax. They can receive another letter in the post. It's another VHS. This time it's outside the house. And it's coming towards the front door. It's grainy footage. Cut to him now. He's basically having sex with the saxophone. No, he's not.
Saxophone sweating.
The saxophone sweating. He's playing it so intensely, it's mad. He's unscrewed the different parts and put them together in different order.
He's blowing into the bell.
His relationship's getting more and more cold and frosty. They get another one in the post. This time, the camera starts from outside their house, goes across the street up to the door, and then it's inside their house. Right, they're watching footage of the inside their house. It goes up the corridor, goes into their bedroom, opens the door, and they're looking at themselves in bed, being filmed by the... And then he's like, right, I'm going to need another saxophone. This is just so stressful. I'm going to have to learn to play two saxes at the same time.
I'm going to have to go to saxophone shopping. It's the only way I can write it. You know me.
I'm going to open a saxophone shop.
I'm going to get one of those really massive sort of sub-contrabass ones that you need a special stand for.
Are you a bit chilled, frightened by what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You see, Ben, for you it's just you just need a tank to be like crushing someone's leg and then you'd be frightened. But for me it's more subtle. So then it's getting super, super creepy. Then they introduce a very, very short evil man comes into the equation.
Classic Lynch.
Classic Lynch. So,
classic trope. All
classic
around,
trope. Right? There's a scene where this man is at a party and he does something like he calls up Bill Pullman and Bill Pullman answers the phone and then Bill Pullman's talking to him and he goes, "Who is it?" And the guy goes, "It's you," or something. And then Bill Pullman's talking to himself on the phone or something like that happens. It's really, really weird. That was the night where I couldn't go home from my brother's. I was after watching that film. I couldn't go home. I was so frightened because I didn't know what to look for. If it's a guy wielding a huge Gatling gun that fires barracudas at you, at least you know what you're looking for. You know how to deal with it, don't you? Yeah.
But at any moment, somebody could play your creepy VHS.
Exactly. How do you deal with it? There's no defense mechanism. Same for the Victorian child whose head's the wrong way around. There's no playbook for how to deal with it.
Who'd you call?
Yeah.
Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Mm. Good little link to round it off.
Lovely.
Nicely done. Imagine the crew of Three Bean Salad, tops off.
Yeah.
Oiled up. Mm-hmm. Flexing in an alleyway, just sort of flexing and bench pressing each other.
Mm-hmm. How when so for example when you're bench pressing Mike, what am I doing?
You're bench pressing me.
Oh, okay. We're doing like a big lasagna.
We're doing a bench press lasagna,
but we are lubed up. It's gonna be quite tricky.
It's very very tricky.
Getting
yeah.
a handle on.
It's gonna be tricky. It's very hard to watch actually, or very hard to do. Even harder to watch. Some people say.
Powerfully emetic. I would say.
Yeah. Oh, very very emetic. And smoking little rollies. Mm-hmm. Gonna be tattooing each other as well.
Yeah.
Wearing little pork pie hats.
Flick knives
and knuckle dusters, please, all round. Maybe toe dusters as well, for good measure.
Illegal fireworks.
Mm. In a sock.
In a sock. How would you define these guys? What kind of guys are they?
That's right, they're tough guys.
They're tough guys.
Can I ask? Mm. I can hear someone's kind of extractor fan going out.
Oh, it's mine. Sorry.
Yeah.
It will be, yeah.
I said someone, Mike, but I knew.
It was a loaded someone.
Right.
What are you extracting, Henry?
Apologies. Fecal odour. Yeah, I've got an open plan kitchen toilet. It's it's very trendy.
Prepare a salad as you shite.
And prepare a shite while you salad, in a way. So it works both ways. And it's one extractor for the whole flat. It's controlled in a button in this door.
That's right. You live under a sort of giant vortex,
that's
don't
right.
you? It's just above the flat that sucks out all...
That's right.
You've rented a space in one of those special turbine machines that people can pretend that they're doing skydives in, didn't you?
That's one of the ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm actually at 75G right now. Whatever that means.
Well, exciting news, actually. A man is coming around at 1 o'clock today to install a shower.
Wow. Oh. So you can have your first wash since you moved, which is how long is...
That's 2 years.
Because you've reached the self-cleaning phase, haven't you?
It's almost not worth it now
because you've created those surface oils,
yeah.
haven't you? And your tongue has become, I can see it's become harder, hasn't it, through licking.
Yeah. Well, you're like a sort of the outside of a barber jacket. You're sort of waxed.
Yes, you've become almost entirely waterproof, I imagine.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, patinaed.
Yeah.
Look at my grouse pocket.
Have you just been having baths for a year? 2 years?
2 years.
No showers?
No showers.
We've gone over this, haven't you? Because you bath at night, don't you?
Yeah.
The dead of night.
Bather. Yeah. But what's annoying is the plumber's just sent me a photograph of the shower that he's going to install. And I have to appraise it and tell him if it looks all right.
Mm.
So I actually need to do that right now, I'm afraid.
Oh. What, live?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. Let's
just send it to you?
Yeah.
I've received your shower, Ben. It looks lovely. It's got a special, the second shower, doesn't it? The movable arse hose.
It has got a movable arse hose. You're right.
Well, that's good for long-term planning, isn't it?
Yeah.
Your arse is not going to be in the same place in 2 years.
What do you mean long-term planning? I'm going to be using that arse hose on day one, minute one.
Yeah, but he means you're going to. It's not necessarily going to be at the same height above sea level in a couple of years' time as it is now.
Oh, I see. So yes, the movable thing. Yes.
Yeah, right. Because right now we know we could break a brick on your buttocks, couldn't we? But you know, give it a couple of years and those mega conkers.
Oh yeah.
We'll start.
Just to explain to the listener, the shower's got two heads, one from above. And then went on a string, on a cord, on a pipe? Yeah. Hose, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which means that I can stop having to wash my arsehole. I won't have to do a handstand in the shower anymore.
So, Ben, I like the look of that shower.
It sounds like there's a butt coming.
Well, one thing I would draw your attention to is... Because if you look closer, just want to make sure that hasn't been generated by an AI.
Oh, yeah, it does look quite CGI.
Is that a real shower? So one of the ways to tell is, does it have any fingers? How do the fingers on it look? They've actually not got any fingers in this picture, Ben, which is a warning flag, isn't it?
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Why isn't there someone holding it?
Who's operating?
They can't do hands. If anyone's ever used a shower, this is the kind of shower you tend to get like in a quite a nice hotel or a gym or something. Because it's got the two options, which is the big circular sort of plate shower from above,
yeah. For the monsoon effect.
For the monsoon effect, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and the manual one for crevice work,
hard to reach areas.
The only thing I'd say is that shower is impressive. It suggests a dynamic sort of lifestyle.
Yeah,
it's a man that needs options, a man that. Yeah, sure, he's checking his stocks and shares on the way to the opera in a kayak.
Yeah?
Because he's got a lot going on, yeah? What do you do with the kayak when you get to the opera?
Well, you've already dragged it quite a long way from the river to get to the opera house.
Exactly.
So the bottom's already ruined.
Get into a bit of an argument with a valet parking service. They're not happy.
So you're a man that gets himself into tight situations sometimes, or into stressful situations. You need a shower. You need that hygiene in your life, don't you? Your guy wants to have a shower. but the question I've got about the shower is it's ambitious, but it's all about the pressure. Because if you don't have the water pressure, that shower is...
You're suggesting Ben should get the shower plumbed in?
Pretty radical.
Look, I'm not an expert, but it's saying that right now, what you sent us is a photograph of a shower.
Yeah.
Is the photograph plumbed? There's no way of telling. But no, so yeah, you're going to want to plumb it then. Otherwise, it's just an admittedly gorgeous bit of wall furniture. And it's something that, from a prestige level, is doing you a lot of favours, and you can show it to people who come around your house and stuff. But it'll need good pressure to get that plate shower at the top working properly. It'll need good pressure. Basically, I've had a shower in a shower like that, and the pressure wasn't good. And it was a slightly disappointing shower.
Oh, shit.
Sorry, I'm really raining on your shower parade.
I mean, the man's coming around in less than 3 hours to literally plumb it in.
Sorry.
So you've got 3 hours to contact your local water board and see if they can divert
and ask
some of their agricultural pumpings.
And ask them to make a pressure assessment.
Well, Henry, maybe could you dam the Nile for me?
I tell you what, assessing pressure is not easy. But Ben, it can be done. Have you got 15 balloons? Because we can do this live and we can make it happen. You need to inflate those balloons in a kind of inflation spectrum from all the way from uninflated to fully inflated and from uninflated to fully deflated.
Once you've got those, all you need is a nuclear barometer
yeah.
to connect them to.
Available from any major university.
A classic Chinese government weather balloon.
Yeah.
That'll do.
That's right.
Yeah, and three haddocks in three different stages of the life cycle. So adolescent haddock, haddock pupae.
Wise haddock.
A crusty-eyed wise haddock. You'll know he's wise because he'll have long, fleshy ears.
and a saggy ass that could do with a bit of a clean.
So what you want to do is get them in your sink. So get them in your bathroom sink and get that water gyrating. Yeah? Clockwise. And then it should be clear from then on what you need to do. No, that's tricky. Ben, would you say you have good water pressure?
I think so.
Well, I think you're probably fine then. Okay. I'm just basing this on one experience I had once where it was in a place with very poor water pressure, and the top shower didn't get much coming out of it. But Penny, Ben's quite concerned. Ben, do you understand how plumbing works? The shower is the absolute, it's the cherry on the icing on the cake. The shower itself is the end of the process, mate. It doesn't matter how impressive your shower is. If there's no pressure, you've got a dribble coming out of it. It doesn't matter how impressive the shower looks. Do you know what I mean? Like, you build your house on good water pressure, Ben.
Yeah, but what's your solution? Is to get a shower with a tiny head that just has one concentrated beam?
Pathetic little straw thing, yeah.
But at least it's coming out fast.
But at least it's coming out fast, and at least it's honest. Yeah. But Mike, any thoughts on this?
Well, it doesn't sound like there's an awful lot that Ben can do about it. I think you're burnt by your previous experience, wherever it was. Where was it?
That was in a holiday place, in a cottage.
In a rural setting.
So in a setting.
Ben's in a thriving city. Ben's in the capital of Wales.
I know. That's right. That's true.
And in France, the water is more sluggish, isn't it? In a kind of like comme ci, comme ça, yeah. Buff,
And it's sort of 7% wine.
Yeah. There's none of that going on in Wales. Yeah. Come on.
And water is our key and only natural resource.
Yeah.
In Wales?
Yeah. Since the mine's shut.
So do you sell your water around the world now?
Well, it's a hot topic for nationalists and stuff, yeah, because a lot of England's water is from Wales.
And is that through seepage or piping?
It's through wet Welshmen coming over to see and then West End shows.
And then ringing them crying their eyes out during performances of Phantom. Yeah. That water stays in London.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's treated, desalinated, and that's what's in your tea.
That's right. And that's why those West End theatre seats are made out of that soft velour sort of squishy material. Because after the show, they are wrung dry, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
And it tends to be particularly what moist under Welsh people because of their...
They're so emotional.
So emotional, exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's why they're only transported to London in sort of Tupperware coaches.
That's right.
And dry out on the way.
That's right.
Around the corner from my house, there is a road that's been commandeered by local skateboarding teenagers.
Oh, no.
And I quite like it.
Mm-hmm.
I like that they're out, they're young, they're having a nice time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not inside playing on their bloody Xboxes or whatever they do these days. I like it. It's quite nice.
Yeah.
And when I drive past them, I just think, oh, they're having fun. That's nice. But it makes me think about the fact that in like 80s American movies, the kind of bully, tough guy character in like the sort of teen movie is normally a kind of skateboarding... Like people in the 80s were terrified of people on skateboards because they were seen
as a rogue element.
Rogue element, exactly. And it was like...
Whereas now... 70% of people on skateboards are called Humphrey, or a derivative of Humphrey, Harry, H, Hazza.
Well, I was going to say these local ones. I don't think they are. They're not posh kids, but they're very hard. They're deeply harmless characters. I mean, there's no.
It's a good point.
No one's worried about them.
You know, it's like the symbols of like what it was to be a tough guy in the 80s.
Yeah,
they'd be beefy. They might be on a skateboard as well.
Yeah, and they'd like listening to Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
But if you meet a teenager these days who's skateboarding, who likes listening to Guns N' Roses, you think, you know, they're not going to be a problem, are they?
No. Oh, the other thing, in a weird way, is almost like a leather jacket as well. Because leather jacket might mean scary once. Whereas now that just means...
Just enjoy retro clothing stores.
Enjoy retro clothing stores and you like going to vintage shops and you probably dress up as an owl
And you're probably one of Trini or Susanna.
You're probably one of Trini or Susanna. Probably addicted to Scrabulous. Yeah, that's the worst habit you've got, is you're struggling with a Scrabulous addiction. Does Scrabulous still exist?
I don't know what it is.
It was an online version of Scrabble, right. Is it?
About at least 10 years ago.
About 15 years ago.
15 years ago. Yeah, 50 or more. Yeah, what's that about, Ben? No, because you're right. I feel like I know what you mean. Oh, you know what this is? Where this is really very evident, what you're saying is in Batman comics.
Okay.
Because I think that's what you're actually talking about, Ben. Without knowing it.
Well, thanks for telling me that, yeah.
In Batman comics, scary people are in alleys.
Yeah.
Now, I've barely even been in an alley. I mean, how often are you in an alley? Do you know what I mean?
Well, I don't live in the underworld of Gotham City.
No, well, no, that's true. Quite a few alleys around this neck of the woods, but they tend to be quite sort of brightly lit. And, you know, the worst that happens is you might step in a turd or something. That's about it.
And has somebody... use an old phone box and turned it into a local library where you can swap books.
Sort of thing going on. Yeah.
Swap a Len Dayton for a Clive Cussler.
And the most terrifying face you like to see is that of a smiling owl fresco, isn't it? Because there'll be a fresco of owls, which you can look at, and it's interactive, and you can press a button, and it's got a contactless thing where you can donate money to an owl sanctuary.
Yeah, you can learn the different calls between a tawny and a barn, for example. Yeah.
And that's as scary as it gets. But in Batman comics, the scary tough guy you might meet in an alley would be like a sort of beefy person in an alley, whereas that doesn't really happen anymore. I don't know what I'm talking about. Maybe it never happened. That's what you're trying to say, Ben. And actually it doesn't really make sense. So why are we trying to say that?
I think also part of that sort of 80s film tough guy stereotype is someone who likes listening to heavy metal.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Again, that's so true, Ben. Yeah.
Whereas sleeveless T-shirts.
Heavy metal people, is it that the most sweet?
Exactly.
The super geeks.
Sweet, sweet, lovely people that happen to have sort of quite intimidating. If you were to
take last week's closing tune, listening to the musician's extraordinary detailed knowledge of musical theory, but also able to rock, you know?
Yeah. And tattoos is another one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Tattoos, that was a symbol of scary person. Whereas now it's a symbol of has a scary amount of knowledge about coffee roasting. Yeah.
So yeah, all the traditional sort of signifiers of being a tough guy are now they're dead. There must be new signifiers that I sort of don't know about.
Yeah, what would they be?
Probably sort of being a member of a gang and having a knife.
Maybe it's just weaponry.
I think tear tattoo is still.
Oh really? Okay.
You know that hasn't crossed over yet.
For those you've offed, one for everyone you've offed, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, is that what the tear tattoo is?
Mm. I think so. Isn't it every cop you've murdered? Is a tear tattoo?
Wow. So you're banking heavily on not getting caught and having to
explain your tear tattoos.
Explain your tear tattoo.
Well, the only way to explain it is you have to say, oh, but I am just a clone.
I am a clone. Which is why they all learn how to do very, very, very good at mime, don't they? All the members of the Medain cartel.
Exactly.
Are all really, really good at... They can all do a sort of sad little mime where they to do mopping a floor and then falling in love with the mop. They can all do that.
Oh, yeah. If you'd seen El Chapo doing that back in the day.
his mop mime.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why it took him so long to get caught, because they'd nearly catch me do the mop mime and the police would just be in tears and moved. And meanwhile, he'd have got on to him and his security chicken, Dr. Sanchez. Disappeared over the horizon. Yeah, tough guy stereotypes. The beefy person. I'm still going to make this point again that everyone is now, or the average person, there's so much more beef around these days. Mm-hmm. Just people are just beefed up because of gym culture. Guilty as charged. You know what I mean? But like, there's a lot of intimidating beefy bodies around. Whereas actually, in a way, what's more scary might be the slightly sort of withered, hunched body of the white-collar criminal.
The real tough guys. Yeah.
The real tough guys.
The real savages.
The thing is, with the gym bod...
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
Isn't it true that basically...
Ask away. I'm open to...
Well, the real tough guy will have more of a kind of Tony Soprano looking bod, right? Just kind of...
That's true, yeah.
heavily built,
yeah,
but certainly not sculptor Jim Bob.
No, you're
he's
right.
Delegating, right? So he's behind the desk most of the time, fielding calls, taking meetings.
And also eating lasagnas.
Loads of ham.
And bolognese and ham.
Yeah.
On his own, on a beautifully dressed table, silver service, napkin tucked into his collar.
Exactly. There. Yeah. Partridges,
yeah.
Boiled hams, boiled partridges.
Yeah. Hammed partridges.
Hammed partridges. If he eats something like something healthy, like fennel, it'll be he'll eat an entire fennel inside a deep-fried goat.
Yeah. By hand as well. He'll have silver cutlery on the table, but he won't use it. Just pick it up and, yeah.
And he'll eat in a really slobbering, vile way.
Yeah. That's really... Wash it down with a goblet of wine.
So that means you've got the strength to cook, but you're right, it's not toned. It's kind of like there's a bit of spare flesh knocking about from all the excess. It's sort of like farmhand strength.
Absolutely, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It's like there's a guy called, you know, it doesn't matter what he's called. There's a guy called Colin who's been going to
He's even got a personal trainer, right?
He's got a personal trainer. He's been going to the gym for 5 years.
Protein powders
every
galore.
Day. Toned, looks beautiful, stunning musculature.
Daily chia seeds.
You can see, you know, each individual muscle group is, you know, is practically labeled. You can see, it's like a diagram of the human body this guy's walking around in. Him or the farmer's slightly simple son, Bruno.
Or his slightly simple father, Bruno, who's in his late 70s.
Yes. Or any
4 foot two. It's like a piece of gristle that you've got off the edge of a very overdone bit of bacon. But the strength in his hands...
Exactly, the strength in his hands.
Crush a breeze block.
Which is why, day after day after day, he finds a wounded bird, and his father, Bruno, says, no, don't try and pick him up, and he tries to pick it up to nurture it, and splats another one every day. Oh, I just want to look after the chicken. I just want to look after the bird with the... And every day, splats a different little pigeon that he's found, trying to look after it. Because he's got a sweet heart.
Oh, yeah.
But...
Just monumental strength.
Monumental strength that is completely unmanageable.
Because isn't it true that, like, Jim, this might be bollocks, but like Jim's strength, basically what you get good at or what you get strong at is doing those exact machines in those exact ways?
Yeah. Great question. I'm going to say yes.
If Henry had to drag a combine harvester up a hill because it had broken down.
It's Bruno every time.
It's Bruno.
Yeah.
It's Bruno every time. Whereas, but if Bruno had to get into an abductor machine,
without a heifer on each shoulder, he wouldn't know where to begin.
And these are the two versions of the tough guy which are presented by the film Rocky IV, is it, or III?
The one where he beats up a farmer.
A hard-working Ohio labourer.
No, it's the one where he has to take on
the Russian. Yeah.
It's the Cold War one. I don't know if it's three or four.
The genetically engineered lab boxer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Dolph Lundgren.
And Lundgren is training like I did. So we're surrounded by sort of attractive young female scientists with clipboards.
Yeah. Oxygen masks, pipes coming out of every orifice.
People with computers spewing like receipts, sort of paper with information on going, we don't understand his body. We don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense.
But you're going to that new communism gym, aren't you, in Old Street?
The new communism gym, yeah.
I reckon that would make a lot of money.
A communism-themed gym
that's like, the idea is it's like a sort of gymnastics gym from East Germany in the 80s.
Really sparsely furbished, but they've got some pretty good tech going on.
Yeah.
But none of the money's going into the bogs, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah, sparse, austere bogs, which they actually get a very expensive designer in to make them look that shitty.
Yeah.
Because they've been made perfectly so
outside,
the tiles have
plank
cracks.
Of wood with a hole in it outside the back.
Yeah.
You need a gantry from which a heavily braided military figure could loom over and view what's going on.
That's right.
And in the gym, every day at midday, he appears.
But he's the personal trainer. The personal trainer there is a kind of, is a lauded general.
And it could just be a cuckoo clock where you've dressed up the cuckoo in military uniform from the Soviet era.
That'll work
fine.
And you want communist-style sort of aphorisms and maxims on the wall, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Work now, work hard, work for future.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. You know what I mean?
You should probably have to pass at least one watchtower and floodlight on the way in.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
This could be huge.
I think you'd get medals, certain amounts of reps.
Yeah. Yeah. That are kind of pressed into your skin.
quite a lot of synthetic steroids.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Loads of that.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to beef up to beat...
They're trying to beat an ideology,
Ben.
Which is the virgin gem across the road.
Which is the virgin gem across the road. Also, just subtly and slowly, this gym would develop a culture of informing on other gym members who aren't working out quite enough. Yeah. That kind of thing. Yeah.
To the extent of even possibly marrying in, you know, a spousal informer, you know.
Yeah,
absolutely, yeah.
That's how ingrained it becomes.
Annual parade?
Oh, definitely. Yes, in which the beefiest people are on a large, sort of mounted on a large truck and sort of erected into the air at an angle.
Yes.
Ballistic beefcakes.
A lot of art can go with it as well.
Really good art. Love beautiful fonts.
Beefy members of the gym looking upwards and...
Yeah.
You know, in a kind of aspirational way.
Holding a scythe. And a dumbbell.
But then eventually you might get infiltrated by someone who's actually from the Virgin Gym. Then you have to offer them a better deal than they're getting at the Virgin Gym and have to switch them, to turn them, to actually become a member of your gym.
Because they've got nice vending machines over their way, haven't they? And probably even a cafe. Whereas you've just got, like, you've just got a sort of bar that sells some, you know, half a pint of Eagle milk and that's it.
And then eventually develop a nuclear arsenal.
So yeah, Rocky 3,
yes.
Is it?
Not sure. But that's the one where there's science strength versus agricultural strength.
Mm.
And agricultural strength will always win. So while I look effing great at the moment, I mean, it's not...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? I'm not... I'm not into this false modesty thing anymore that Brit is so... So hampers British people, I find. Well, since I've gone on my beefcake journey, since I've got into diet supplements and a whole range of conspiracy theories about various different things, I've become much more self-confident. So I do look effing great. But if I was to work on a farm for a weekend, I think they'd be throwing my carcass to the hogs.
Within minutes.
Before lunch on day one. Yeah.
It's true. I think farmers are the true strong. The true tough guys.
The true tough guys.
I had a weird thing last week where, you know how Twitter is awful?
Mm.
I did a tweet about something. Oh, it was quite innocuous. The Guardian did an interview with Ray Winston.
Mm-hmm.
And they opened the interview by saying that Ray Winston is so fat that when he walked in, he looked like a barrel on stilts.
Oh, my God.
And I just thought, I wrote something like, you know, imagine doing an interview with The Guardian and then buying the paper and finding out they'd opened with that. But I just thought it was a bit much.
Yeah.
Anyway, because it's Twitter, that turned into, like, you know, people arguing in the comments underneath. And of course, then somehow it turned into an argument about kind of gender. It's just completely mad, you know, how these things happen.
Yeah.
Anyway, someone said something that was quite sort of or fairly transphobic thing, and I just kind of went, oh, fuck off.
Yeah.
And then that just... A billion people then got in contact with me and started writing messages. And one woman screenshotted my face and then on her Twitter account wrote something about, I hate people with faces like this. This face screams weakness.
Finally, something we can all agree on.
And it was weird. And it made me think about just like the idea of strength and... Like, it made me think. So I'm not the most physically imposing person, and that's never really been a problem for me. Because we don't live in a society, unless you are a farmer or a miner.
Rabbits actually approach you, don't they? you have the opposite effect. Yeah.
The number of phones have been taken off you by a velveteen lop-eared over the years.
You're the only person I know that's been mugged by rabbits, like, was it like 5 times now? Yeah.
Flopsy, no!
Yeah, you're targeted by tiny woodland creatures, aren't you?
I'm stalked by terrifying mink.
Yeah. You've had your identity stolen by a shrew, haven't you, several times? you're seen as fair game.
I don't need to be strong, particularly. I don't need to be big. I'm not someone who's going to get in a fight. I don't need to. You know, there's a misalignment between what you need to have these days, because we don't live in a terrifying state of nature anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can become just a shriveled body and a brain in a jar. And it'll be fine.
Just occasionally someone lousing a Tannox tea cake into the jar for you once in a blue moon. keep you happy.
But in a way, in the era of big tech, or in the era of tech, the pale, withered. Well, what me and Mike were saying, discussing you the other day, worm in specs, we call it. Is it as a shorthand?
Pregnant worm in specs. Yeah.
Sort of Davros.
Imagine Davros had been dragged out of his sort of techno unit.
He'd really tied one on the night before.
a sort of beached Davros. So, but in a quite a remote Scottish island, so he's not had anyone pouring water on him or looking after him.
Oh, yeah. A hill walker has found him days and days after the beach. Days and days. Beaching. Yeah.
Greenpeace aren't interested. Greenpeace are like, we have to focus on lovable. We've realised in the era of TikTok, we have to focus on lovable looking animals.
We can't float that back out. If anything, we need to bring the British Army in to get some ordnance under that and try and scatter that or something.
Sort of looks like E.T. when he gets ill and he gets all white.
But this is, I'm including myself, I'm saying, Mike is a very Adonis, there's no getting around that.
Yeah. Michelangelo's Michael?
Michelangelo's Michael. but that is the body of power, you could argue now.
It's the Zuckerberg bod.
The Zucker bod, exactly.
The Mekon.
The Mekon.
What's a Mekon?
A Mekon was the Dan Dare's arch nemesis?
Yeah, it was an alien from a comic book.
It's basically a brain, sort of green brain with a sort of vestigial rest of body. On a sort of floating platform,
in a hover platform, and that's why Ben, that you do invest in hover platform technology.
It's going to come in handy.
Just keep me moist, and I'm fine.
Well, Ben, the way you see hover platform technology is it's a win-win for you. Which is, if the investment goes well, you make more money. You can invest that in more moisturizer to keep yourself more lubricated. Mm. If it doesn't work out, at least you've helped support the hover platform industry. Even if
so it's a legacy of sorts, isn't it?
It's a hover platform legacy, isn't it?
Yeah.
But then I have thought about this, Ben. It's interesting. In a way, a physical beefiness, you could argue, is a sign of another some other form of weakness. Which is why you're beefing up so much. What the weakness that's covering up will be having a little willy.
It's been pecked off by a chicken.
It's been pecked off by Dr. Sanchez. And it's contributed towards his dried up willy necklace. Grab your Factor 20 and a Grisham.
Your sombrero and your Polaroids.
We're going to
the beach.
We're going shingleside.
Hope you enjoyed your trip to the beach with the beans.
Because you're going straight back again.
Because you're going back.
Here's some more beach stuff. Or maybe not. I mean, it's stuff we recorded while we were making the beach episode.
You know when you've gone to a beach holiday and you come home and there's little bits of sand in your body and your shoes? It's bits of spare beach, isn't it? Here's some spare beach chat.
Good. In some really uncomfortable crevices.
In some really uncomfortable crevices.
It's going to be really hard to clean. Get off the whole floor.
Get onto everything. Probably you have to spend the rest of life with this
for months.
Horrible feeling. Horrible, horrible feeling. In the changing room. That guy.
The carefree bollock towler.
Is it just a guy who's just quite relaxed? Is it just he's a nice guy? Or is he making some kind of play for dominance?
Well, if it's me, because I am slightly that guy, I'm certainly not making a play for dominance. I just think it's like a healthy lack of shame, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't like flaunt my body around, but I'm not too concerned about that kind of stuff. And I think it's like a British thing. Is it like, it feels like I remember I went to Germany once. And I went to a swimming pool, and the changing room was co-sex.
Right. Good Lord.
And everyone just got on with it. It was fine. It wasn't a problem. It felt like an enlightened state. Whereas in Britain, that people would be vomiting.
You could have put that on a poster, Ben, in 2016, and the Brexit vote would have been 99-1. This is what they want to do. They want to make your changing rooms unisex.
But nothing bad was happening. It was just people changing. It was fine.
Just people not worried about sort of willies and boobs and stuff. Yeah.
So I'm thinking, right, Henry's a London man. So for you, the closest you get to a beach is...
Reading the Evening Standard.
Reading the Evening Standard next to the Thames.
Yeah.
But for Mike is like a in beach zone, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Like, I'm assuming that Mike is getting in quite a lot of trips to the beach.
We can get, we're sort of half an hour from the nearest one.
Yeah.
And then sort of maybe 45 from some very nice ones.
And is it a family trip? Do the family like it? Is it
There's
like
a lot of that. Yeah, yeah.
It's a big bonus, isn't it, for family stuff?
Yeah, as soon as the weather is in any way clement. And even if it's inclement, to be honest, we might, like Pam will have a stroll on the beach on a windy, rainy day. Good fun. Yeah.
And you've got like a frogman suit and a harpoon, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Which I'll have the frogman suit on me at all times underneath his jumper, just in case.
Yeah.
And the harpoon down my trouser leg. But that's Exeter, you know.
But you love coming back, don't you, with an endangered turtle writhing around on the end of you?
Well, it's something to talk about, isn't it?
It's something to talk about.
Yeah, it's better than just a mackerel or something. You want to mix it up now and again, don't you?
Yeah.
With a turtle or a little baby porpoise or a merman, you know.
Merboy.
Yeah.
In Britain, we've got two main kinds of beaches, right? Windswept.
Yeah.
National Trust car park.
Your north coast, North Cornish coast kind of, you know, type beach.
Gower Beach.
Yeah, absolutely. Might get the odd seal popping up.
Lovely. And then there's like the kind of end of the pier beach.
Yeah.
And that is
pleasure beach.
A very different kettle of fish.
Yeah. And that's the kind of beach where the water companies are making absolutely no effort whatsoever to stop pumping turds out into the sea day in and day out.
Well, that's why it's so lovely and warm, isn't it? The
yeah.
You know, they're trying to make it into a beach sport now, aren't they? Turd catching. They're trying to make it into the third big beach sport, which is water skiing, big inflatable banana.
Yep. Jet skis.
They're trying to make it one of those, aren't they now? Which is you go out with a sort of a little turd net.
Yeah, they need more kit. That's what they need.
Those
kinds of activities, they're all about the kit, right? And if your turd net's going in your boot, no one's interested. They need something that needs to go on the back of a trailer, on the back of a car. That's
you need like
a
sort
heads.
Of... an orca helmet or something that you wear that's quite cool.
It needs
cool.
to be floated off of its own pontoon. Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, no one's interested.
Yeah.
If there's no risk that kit is going to smash every bone in your body and really change your Saturday afternoon, then
no dice.
The guys who would buy it are not going to buy it. Yeah.
There's another kind of beach in Britain, which is in Scotland.
Yeah.
This thing happens if you're driving around in the Highlands, you'll come across... like the most beautiful beach you've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's like the absolute brochure perfect white sand.
Yeah. No one's there.
Pure, no empty. Yeah. The myth of the empty white sand beach that you get sold by brochures, which doesn't really exist. And you get there, but you get out. But the deal is that it's colder than the heart of a magnum. It is so freezing, but it's perfect to look at. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So if only you could just keep, I suppose you could have a nice day by the beach, just wearing like seven layers, a parka,
4 inches of blubber,
ski gloves, a blubber suit, whatever. In theory, you could have the perfect day at the seaside on one of those beaches because they're absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
But they're absolutely freezing. That's one of the things about beaches, which, so I've always thought that, you know, you get, the beach is such a great image. It feels a bit 70s to me now, but it's exactly the same as it always was. It's on brochures and on posters advertising holidays and stuff. It's the image of the beach, the pure white sand beach, the palm tree, the little crabs.
Crab waiters.
the crab waiters, the lobster maitre d'.
The mushroom cloud from the nuclear test that's happening just 50 miles away.
And the crayfish pianist.
But all that perfect image.
Yeah.
It's so powerful. Like when you're just going about your daily grind or whatever, it's perfectly designed, like sort of like propaganda or something, isn't it? It's like looking up at a propaganda poster of like, yes, I could, if I just keep doing my daily grind, keep putting, trying to, you know, paying my tax and stuff and doing my commute and working for the man and all that shit.
Yeah.
I'll get to be there in that post. But what happens is the image that you see, you get there, you're on the beach holiday, it's happened, you've arrived in the picture, yeah, essentially. But the picture stops at the left and right and top and bottom because it's a picture. You know? Whereas real life goes on, like left goes on and right goes on. Do you know what I mean?
And unfortunately, there's a sky.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's a place. Yeah, but you look left and there's like a massive hotel, 5,000 people. Yeah. The crab waiter, not crab waiter, actually, it's a gang of crabs smoking. Aggressive crabs. Yeah.
You look to the right, big MOT centre.
Great rates.
Great rates.
But a bit of an eyesore.
And actually, it's so convenient, you've actually gone and got an MOT done on your hire car. There's no reason you're not benefiting from it. But it was, you got it done anyway. The lobster isn't a maitre d'. The lobster's got a bloody Bluetooth speaker, hasn't he?
And he's paid full board, so he's not going anywhere.
You've sold the image, but real life isn't an image. Real life is the stuff to the left, the stuff to the right. The stuff behind you. What's happening behind you? A bloody really, really loud disco or whatever. Or a rap battle or something. Isn't it like this stuff? There's all this stuff going on which isn't in the picture, which is why I've designed Henry's holiday helmet.
Okay.
Essentially, it's a helmet, HHH, Henry's holiday helmet. It's a helmet you put on and it cuts out everything to the left, everything to the right, everything to the top, the bottom. You're looking at a rectangle. You're essentially looking at the poster.
But you're still not, the trouble with that is that you're still not in the poster. You're still looking at the poster, just from closer.
You say that, Mike.
Yeah.
But actually, as soon as you put the helmet on, you're given a drug which puts you into a coma. It's very, by a, I'm not going to say qualified anaesthetist, but I'm going to say
an enthusiast.
A hobbyist.
A keen hobbyist.
A lot of the time they're more into it than the professionals, but possibly. And also, yeah, he's not just a hobbyist anaesthetist, he's a rogue hobbyist anaesthetist who's been thrown out of a lot of the hobby anaesthetist guild sort of groups for being too enthusiastic about putting people to sleep and not enthusiastic enough about waking them up. But as soon as you put the helmet on, you're anaesthetized, and actually you are transported to a fully painted globe, but painted from the inside.
Sort of like a planetarium.
Like a planetarium.
Yeah.
But a lot smaller and more sort of stuffy.
Right.
Painted with the image from the poster, 360. And you're trapped in that. And you can scream all you want, but sound cannot penetrate. You're in a globe.
In a coma.
You're in a coma.
Yeah, you didn't really paint it if it's going to be in a coma.
To be honest, we tell people afterwards that we painted it, but actually they were just in a, the truth is they were just in a coma. The ones that wake up, that is.
They were just in a coma in Clapham South.
Yeah. Although secretly you're actually in the slightly less expensive Clapham East. Tell you that you were in Clapham South if it gets to court. But what I always say is they can't sue you if they're dead. Or it turns out that their family and the state can sue you and will, especially if they're dead. Something I hadn't thought through. The sea is full of a lot of infection, isn't it? I think. Because I was once on a beach holiday where I went swimming in the sea and I was really worried about jellyfish and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was so keen to avoid the jellyfish at one point that I saw this... I mean, jellyfish are just horrendous, aren't they? Can we say that?
Jellyfish.
How can you like jellyfish? But they ruin a beach holiday. They ruin the sea. It's like, there's something about the world, isn't it? It's never like... nothing's ever perfectly good. It's always like, we'll give you a lovely beach, we'll give you a lovely crystalline sea, and all we'll do is fill it with evil aliens that are trying to really, really hurt you and your family. That's the one downside. And the other one is sea anemones that just look so evil.
The kind of thing you might step on and all of a sudden there's a barb in your skin that's going to kill you in exactly 3 months and 2 days.
Yeah. One VAT quarter.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they've tried to tie it in as much as they can with HMRC.
So you get your paperwork in order.
So you've got 1 month, after you get to the end of the VAT quarter, and 3 months to tie up your paperwork.
Yeah. I think that's why if I'm at the beach, I will tend to go. If you go into the deeps, into the depths, you're all right. Not many people go out there. Most people don't venture into the sea at all. Some people venture in the shallows and splash about. Not many people.
Do you go for the horizon, Mike?
Swim out. I go for as close to the horizon as I can.
There's always quiet. Land eventually, darling.